is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
National cybersecurity strategy issued by the Biden administration within these last days. What is it? It points to events over these last two decades, now three decades, that are presented as hacking, penetration of systems, stealing of privacy, stealing of secrets. The frustration for many over these years is what is safe from bad actors, from foreign powers, and from your neighbors. That the National Cybersecurity Strategy, if I read it correctly, is the beginning answer developed over several administrations, but this is the frontline thinking now. To help me with the acronyms and with the interpretation, I welcome Francis Rose of FedGovToday.com. That is Francis's podcast, twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and his TV show, debuting on April 30th in Washington, Channel 7, on FedGovToday. This is the part of the Fed, though, that must be secure. And yet, Francis, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The exciting moment in the revelations of national cybersecurity strategy is that security is futile, that as one of your quotes will remind us, the enemy is already inside the gates. Or the great horror movies of the 20th century, when a woman calls up and says, I'm being harassed on the phone, and the operator comes back and says, the phone call is coming from inside the house, cue music. Francis, the enemy is inside the gates. What can be done? What does National Cybersecurity Strategy think can be done? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thank you for having me on the program, as always. The words that you're talking about are the words of the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Defense, John Sherman, and he opened the department's Zero Trust strategy in October of 2022 with these words: our adversaries are in our networks, exfiltrating our data and exploiting the department's users. And that gave the rest of the federal government license to express outwardly what they'd been talking about inwardly for a number of years, that everybody's networks are exposed and everybody's data is exposed. Now what to do about it? That's the question that you asked me, and that's the question that the National Cyber Strategy out last week is trying to address. This is an update to the 2018 National Cybersecurity Strategy, and the main differences here were the subject of the conversations that you referred to in your kind introduction. Karen Evans, the former eGov administrator and Department of Homeland Security Chief Information Officer, Suzanne Spaulding, the former head of the department inside the Department of Homeland Security that is now the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and Suzette Kent, the former Chief Information Officer of the United States under President Trump. And what they all in common saw as the move forward in this is an emphasis on the workforce and the difficulties that not just the federal government is having, but the contractors that work with the federal government, Wall Street firms, and just about everybody are having in finding enough people to build the defenses and maintain the defenses against the hackers that all of these companies and all of these federal agencies need, John.
Some fundamentals. What is it the government means when it says zero trust is our aspiration? What is zero trust?
Zero trust is a cybersecurity technique that that states that every time someone tries to log on to a network, rather than ascertaining a credential and then saying that whoever has that credential must be the person to whom that credential was issued, each time that someone tries to access a network, the system is going to verify through automation tools and multiple ways that that person actually is that person. And then it will, based on that identification, it will give that person access to only the parts of the network that it is supposed to, that person is supposed to have access to. And the theory behind that is that since it's inevitable now that adversaries will get inside the network, the way to prevent the maximum damage is to prevent the way that an adversary can move around inside a network. And that is what the zero trust school of thought undertakes, is to stop that lateral movement inside an agency's network to be able to exfiltrate information or just have access to information.
How to get there means that you must work with the commercial world, with the private world. And those two, theoretically, don't work smoothly together. Or do they? Are they learning? Can you go to the big banks and say, what do you do to maintain the trust of your customers? Does that conversation happen?
Yeah, well, what's really fascinating to me, John, is that I want to go back to the Obama administration and maybe before that, a number of technology leaders from those kinds of companies have come into the federal government. For example, the chief information officer at the Defense Department during the Trump administration, portion of the Trump administration, was a man named Dana Deasy, whose previous career included the technology position at J.P. Morgan Chase. The federal chief information officer under President Obama was a man named Tony Scott, who had previously been a technology leader at Microsoft and General Motors. State Department CIO under President Trump was Stuart McGuigan, who had been the CIO at Procter & Gamble. So those kinds of cross-pollinations are happening in addition to just the ongoing conversations about best practices. But federal government technology officials interact with private sector leaders in big companies like the ones that you alluded to all the time. I would say the difference in the tenor of those conversations, quite frankly, from what people on both sides of the table tell me, is that for the first time over the last couple of years, the private sector leaders are learning as much from the government people about what they're doing as the government people are learning from the private sector folks about what they're doing.
Suzanne Spaulding, your first guest, National Cybersecurity Strategy, commenting that what she embraces about this is that it details where the markets failed. Is that typical of government to say what we did wrong?
Well, it's typical of the government to say for sure what the government has done wrong. And I think the market that she's referring to is not the traditional private sector market selling to government so much as it is what the government has not done well and not done for itself, because this is the national cybersecurity strategy. But the emphasis is on the federal government, what the agencies are doing to secure the data that they have. And that's another shift, I guess, in what people have been talking about for a long time. The cybersecurity strategy, small letters, of the federal government revolved around building a moat around the network and saying we're not going to let anybody in, and trying to protect equipment as much as trying to protect data.
Right.
The emphasis now is entirely on trying to protect the data and keep that data as secure as the government can possibly keep it.
Yes, I enjoyed Suzanne's use of a word as well, resilience. Resilience. I scribbled my notes quickly. Constant redundancy and plan B and analog. What is she talking about?
So resilience is the concept that a number of people have a number of different definitions for in the cybersecurity realm, John. But to most people, resilience means the ability to prevent an attack, and when an attack happens, the ability to mitigate the damage as much as possible, and then the ability to recover from that attack as quickly as possible. That's kind of the thumbnail sketch of what resilience means. Now, people put different meat on the bones, so to speak, in different ways, but that's the gist of what people are going for when they talk about cybersecurity resilience.
And Suzanne, just a moment, also talked about what comes next, trying to imagine what comes next. Now, if the enemy's already inside the gates, it makes it a much more difficult prospect. What I could guess is what we're looking for is you have to make costs to getting inside. There's got to be some way to push back. Is that what they're thinking? That if you've come in our gates, we're going to punish you in your gates?
So that's been a topic of discussion, pretty heated discussion from time to time over the years in the cybersecurity and technology realm. And the first time that the federal government really addressed it was, I think, in 2010 or 2011. The Secretary of Defense at the time was Leon Panetta. He gave a speech in New York, and it was the first time that a sitting government, U.S. government official, expressed the sentiment, a cyber attack doesn't necessarily mean a cyber attack back. We may respond to a cyber attack with a kinetic attack. We may respond to a kinetic attack with a cyber attack, and vice versa. And so ever since then, there's been a lot of debate about how do you correctly attribute a cyber attack in order to respond to the correct party. We don't want to respond to a party just as we wouldn't want to drop a bomb on somebody that didn't attack us. We don't want to do a cyber attack in the same way. So that's the attribution in the cyber realm has been one of the really difficult pieces of what you do back when someone attacks you or hacks you.
It's all wonderful to consider cybersecurity in terms of robots executing these commands and coming up with these inventions, but it's human beings. And we're going to turn now to a big part of the story that Francis has made clear across all agencies, which is finding the workforce for your mission. Francis Rose of FedGov Today, fedgovtoday.com, twice a week a podcast, his interviews with present or former officers of the federal government and their challenges maintaining the American empire. And he's on television at the beginning, at the end of April, previewing his show, FedGov Today, on TV. When we come back, what workforce? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.